Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Halloween. For all you trick and treaters, I hope you have a great day today. I got up pretty early this morning to get our 7-year-old ready, who is Prince Charming today at school because his first grade class is doing a special fairy tale Halloween. And it seems one of the little girls in his class decided she was going to be a princess. So AJ came home and told me that he thought he better be a prince. And then after we got him all ready to be a prince, all dressed up in a suit with a cape, and you know, I made a crown out of a sparkly hat. He comes home and tells me he doesn't want to be a prince anymore because he just found out that the little girl that he was talking about isn't going to be a princess. At 7 already, he's letting the ladies in his life mandate what he's going to do. It's very, very scary. Last night we went to a special celebration for Halloween at Kaiser University, where my eldest son is a student. And it was great. All the professors participated. A lot of the students participated. They have a couple classes that do theatrical makeup, and some of the things were pretty scary. Most noted was a huge man who dressed as It, the horrible clown in the Stephen King story about the clown that lives underground and steals children. Oh, my Lord, was he scary. My grandson wouldn't get close to him until the end of the evening, and then he wasn't so scared. But I saw a couple little girls pretty traumatized by this very, very menacing, probably 7-foot-tall clown. But it was an interesting evening, and they all had fun and had way too much candy, as usual. And today, of course, more celebration all day today at school, as well as trick-or-treating tonight. So it's my wish that everyone is safe and that you participate in this holiday with a little bit of wisdom, a little bit of fun and frivolity, but don't forget to be careful and don't forget to pay attention to what's going on all the time, especially if you're going to walk out in the streets. And always a steadfast rule way back when my kids were little and when the older grandchildren were little was nobody eats candy until it gets home. So I think that's a good rule to follow as well. So have fun, everybody. I hope you enjoy the day and the evening. I'm going to bring Shelley in because of what I did yesterday afternoon and last night, I was unable to go to the great debate in regard to marijuana, medical marijuana here in the state of Florida. So we're going to bring Shelley in and let her fill us in on what she found out and what her thoughts are on this this idea to bring in medical marijuana. Good morning, Shelley.
Well, good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Doing good.
That's good. Well, do you feel a lot more enlightened after witnessing the debate last night?
Yeah. I mean, I understand both sides, but I'm actually on a third camp, which surprised me because I didn't expect to hear some of the views I did. And I'm more towards the side that still does not want legalization of marijuana, although I'll explain that in a minute. He's not even totally against it either. He's just against it being so unregulated, like what they've seen in California and some of the other states, where basically anybody who's got a headache can get medical marijuana. And he said that wasn't the intent of it. So that was some of the discussions. But I'm kind of in a third camp, and I'll explain that in a minute. But just to let everybody know, it was the debate was sponsored by the Palm Beach County Substance Awareness Coalition. The director of of that coalition kind of introduced the evening. It was handled very professionally, by the way. The school did the this was set up by the Palm Beach State College in Lake Worth at the Duncan Theater, and they did a really nice job of it. They had dozens of volunteers everywhere, so it was easy to get in, easy to get to your seat. The room was packed, and they had a moderator from the Palm Beach Post, named Mr. Randy Schultz. He did a very professional job of moderating the questions and going back and keeping order. A lot of the people in the audience who were pro-legalizing got kind of rude at times during the night. They would start heckling the guy who was against it, and sometimes they would get very, very loud and unruly, and the moderator shut them down instantly, you know. And he said, look, this is a debate. He says, we have to keep our decorum here, and he says, and I expect everybody to, he said, you can have your opinions, you know, and he says, and you can disagree, but he said, don't be disrespectful. He said, we're not going to tolerate that. And they would. They would instantly shut down. So I was very impressed with the decorum that they kept during the debate. And these two guys are actually friends, the two guys that were debating. The guy who is for legalization is Aaron Houston. He's the executive director of the Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and he oversees the work of a national staff that coordinates students on more than 200 campuses. And he's been doing this since, he named a rising star of politics by Campaigns and Elections magazine in 2008. All right, so he's been doing this for quite a number of years. The guy who's against it is Kevin A. Sabat. He's a PhD doctor. He has 18 years experience working on drug policy. He's the director of Drug Policy Institute of the University of Florida and associate professor in the College of Medicine. He also works, he and Patrick Kennedy, the heir to the Kennedy family, he and Patrick Kennedy have co-founded a project called Project SAM, which is Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Patrick Kennedy had some issues with becoming addicted and getting clean and all that. So he has actually joined forces against legalizing marijuana because of his experiences and being clean now. So it was an interesting evening. And basically, they are talking about legalizing marijuana for medical use because it does have so many therapeutic effects. As far as, like, if somebody's on chemo, it helps to reduce their awareness of pain and to help increase their appetite, which when people use chemo is one of the things that, you know, they lose their appetite. Other things like MS and other disorders like that, it helps people with the different, it's mostly for pain management and other symptoms. The one thing that frustrated me last night is when both camps were talking, they kept talking about marijuana like it was a cure. It's not. It's symptom management. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not unlike any other pharmaceutical. So that's where my third camp is that I don't think drugs should be used, or at least to the prevalence they are. I think there's probably less than 5% incidence. And this is a statistic that other scientists have quoted, that there's less than 5% incidence where an actual pharmaceutical intervention is needed because someone's not recovering fast enough. But the vast majority of illnesses, including cancers and MS and things like that, the body can heal itself, and you can get symptom relief from pain and things like that through holistic methods, through different types of foods like anti-inflammatories, cumin, and different natural foods that have these anti-inflammatory effects. There's also natural foods that can spike appetite without having to smoke marijuana. So that's kind of where I'm coming from, why I was reacting to them, because both of them feel that medical marijuana, the pro and the con, both feel that medical marijuana should be permitted. But the difference between the two camps is that the guy who's against legalization of marijuana is saying that when you legalize it, it becomes a ruse. It's now available to anybody who's got a headache. which is not what the side is trying to legalize it is for. They want it for people with cancer and MS and AIDS and Crohn's disease and things like that. But again, it's not curing any of those diseases, and that's my reaction to the whole thing, all right? But the guy who's saying that Kevin Sabat started out by saying that companies make profits on alcohol and tobacco. It's no different. He said you have lobbyists out there trying to push this through because they're going to turn it into another tobacco or alcohol industry. They're going to make money off of it. He said you have people, you have lobbyists waiting in the background right now, he said, to market all the products that will go with selling legalized marijuana. He said so. He says a lot of the proponents for it, he says, are looking at big business profits. Aaron, who's the guy against it, disagrees with that. He said that there's a lot of government propaganda against marijuana that's not accurate. He said that he thinks it's a tragedy that people get locked up for use, and I agree with that, and even Kevin agreed with that, that, you know, that people shouldn't be jailed for one-time use or low users, somebody that smokes on the weekends or socially or something like that. They were both on the same with that, that the consequence to people who are low users should not be there and that people shouldn't be being jailed for smoking it. They're talking about people that that create these grow these grow houses. They, you know, they're not maintaining the proper quality of the marijuana. They're making huge profits, and he said that they still feel that, you know, like growing, well, the guy who's against it feels that growing it should still be illegal, but that people that use in lower amounts shouldn't be criminalized and put in jail. He said that 60%, according to Aaron, 60% of cartel profits come from marijuana, that marijuana profit is huge, and that by legalizing it, you would shut down the majority of the drug cartels' backbone, basically. All right, Kevin disagreed with that. He said that the profits from profits for the cartels is much lower than that. I think he said it was around 20%. Yeah, he said only 15 to 20% of the underground marijuana market goes to cartels. So there was a little bit. I'm wondering where they get their statistics from. One thing Kevin did say when he brought up his statistic is when he rebutted Aaron is he said that his statistics came from a very recent RAND study, not an 8-year-old study. So he inferred that Aaron is quoting old facts that aren't true anymore. So I found that interesting when they were debating that, you know, like when he would counter Aaron, he would come up with something and he would give the date and time that it came about. So I thought that was interesting. So he's saying that the marijuana is not the backbone of the drug cartels, then that in fact it's only funding about 20% of those operations, that the rest is being funded by cocaine and heroin and human trafficking and things like that. And he said, not marijuana. So they kept going back and forth, countering each other. The one thing I found very interesting is that Kevin was saying that there are scientists that are trying to find out the elements in marijuana that actually produce the symptom relief, that bring about, you know, the positive effects on a human being and turn it into a pill form or an under-the-tongue spray or something like that. And he said there's actually scientists in the UK that are trying to develop an under-the-tongue spray right now that will not get a person high, but it's going to extract the elements that bring about particular symptom relief, and that they're looking to market that in the next couple of years. Aaron made a good point, though. He said that the problem with the pill, there is a pill out right now called Marinol, but he said it is so concentrated and so pure of just the THC, he said that a lot of people who smoke pot and take this, he said, actually say it's too strong. It knocks them out. They can't function. And it certainly wouldn't be safe for a younger person. So he said the pill form is synthetic, And I do agree with that, because whenever you take anything in nature.
Sounds like we lost Shelley. I don't know what happened, but I think a couple of the different things, a couple of the different points that she's brought up that I'm going to request more information on. One, of course, is how are they going to define usage? How are they going to check the usage? Are you back, Shel?
Yeah, hi.
Okay. And a couple other things, but I'll wait until she's done and then we'll discuss that. Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay, hi. So how long ago did you lose me?
I lost you when you were talking about the fact that they can't take Marinol and that...
Okay, right. So that was just about when I lost the call. All right. Right, so the problem with that is that, and here I kind of agree with Aaron when he's saying that, because I know how drugs are made, and I don't agree with it. Whenever you take anything that's naturally occurring in nature, and he made a good point about this, he said that the marijuana plant that has TCH, but it also has a lot of other chemicals that are naturally in the plant that will basically regulate the amount of TCH in the body so it's not so heavy hitting. So if you just take the TCH out as an extract, and now you don't have these other elements, and he gave names of other chemicals that are in the, let's say substances, they're not chemicals, other substances that are in the natural plant that are now not balanced when they make this synthetic form, he's right. Because now you're getting something that the body is not going to recognize. You're not going to get the same effects of it. Kevin, who's the guy against it, was saying, Kevin Sabat, is saying that, you know, he said, what other drug do you smoke? He said, smoking anything is not good for the lungs. It's not a healthy way to deliver the relief. So they both made very good points on that regard, okay? I kind of saw both sides of the issue on that with regard to turning it into, if you're going to say that this is a medical treatment, then make it a medical treatment. Don't have it available through grow houses and what they called these dispensaries. He actually said that in, was it Colorado or California now, he said that there are more medical marijuana dispensaries in Los Angeles than there are Starbucks. I want you to think about that. You can't turn a corner here without finding a Starbucks. They're all over. And he's saying that there are more medical dispensaries in Los Angeles than there are Starbucks. That got my attention. And that just shows you how over broad this whole thing has become, because it's very profitable. It's very cheap to grow pot, and they can charge a lot for it. It's a very profitable enterprise. So, you know, so I see both sides of the camp on that issue. If it is medical, why is it being smoked? Why isn't it being provided in a spray or something like that? Aaron made another good point in that the government does not allow research on medical marijuana. So here the government is allowing laws to be passed to legalize it in certain states, but then they're not providing funding to domestic companies to research the use, to try and make something, to try and make a non-synthetic pill or another delivery system other than smoking it, okay? This UK company, I guess they're in London, well, it's somewhere in Europe, because UK doesn't necessarily mean England, but somewhere in the UK, there's a laboratory that is producing this because they don't have these laws. So they're buying medical marijuana from the United States and testing it in the UK to develop this spray, but meanwhile no domestic company is being permitted to do that. So that I agree with Aaron on. That's kind of silly for our government to tie our own hands with something like this, and I'm not really not sure why the government makes decisions like that. It's very counterproductive as far as I'm concerned. So they both made very, very good points from their perspective stances. My stance, which is a third stance, is that I don't believe in prescription medication. except in very, very rare instances. I think that the vast majority of illnesses can be healed and healed completely through lifestyle, natural therapies, energetic therapies, eating better, drinking alcohol and water, things like that, and to get the same relief that people get from marijuana, but without doing the damage to the sheath of the brain, which does cause other damage. One other thing before we begin our discussion is the Palm Beach County Substance Awareness Coalition did hand out a flyer last night. I did not realize this until the end of the event, but they are very, very much against, strongly opposed. In fact, that's what their flyer says. They are strongly opposed to the They're strongly opposed to legalizing marijuana, but they are not opposed to medical marijuana, providing that there are strong enough programs and regulation done. One of the things that Kevin had said is that in California, listen to this, less than 2% of medical marijuana is being used by people with AIDS, cancer, MS, or other diseases that it was originally cited for. The average user in California of medical marijuana is a white male, 32 years old, with a history of drug abuse and no substantial health issues. And this is what Judge Judy was saying on her show when she was made a comment about the fact that it was legalized in California.
Well, I think that the one statement that can be made about this in generalization is the fact that we already know that anybody who has an addictive personality is going to strive to be able to have the availability of marijuana, whether it's deemed medical, non-medical, whatever it is. There will be people that are just like there is with oxycodone and Oxycontin. There's a lot of people out there that could do just as well with a couple Advil or Tylenol, and they prefer to go to a doctor and very easily can get a prescription for the other much more dangerous, for one thing, but a lot stronger medications to put them in another zone. A lot of people are of the mindset that if you feel anything, that you need something for it. Pain is a part of life, and aches and pains are certainly a part of life. I don't see myself, even though I'm not sure whether I'm against it or for it at this point in time, even after everything that you've just said, because it sounds like it will be, number one, impossible to regulate. Number two, just another opportunity for people who are entrepreneurial and innovative to make money on the side. And I think that if somebody is going to be allowed to do medical marijuana, then it has to be met, certain criteria has to be met. You can't just go to a doctor and have them write a script for it, or just go to a doctor and say, look, I have headaches that are so bad, I have migraines that are so bad, I can't deal with it, I need some weed. There will have to be very, very, very strict guidelines. And, again, I no longer believe, like I said yesterday, that it's as bad as what I always thought it was. But it all depends on the person. I mean, there are some people that abuse aspirin, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
there are people that abuse, anything that changes who they are or that alters what's going on in their own head. So I don't know.
Let me comment on that, because that's something they both commented on last night. And a few points they'd agreed on, which was kind of nice. But they said that the vast majority of people that smoke marijuana do not become addicted to it, it's not a gateway to other drugs. They don't become lax at their jobs and start sitting around, playing games on their TV all day. He said that's maybe only 20% of the users. They said, but unfortunately, that 20% of users then end up constituting 90% of the crimes and accidents at jobs and things like that of marijuana users. So even though they're a very small portion of the marijuana users, they create 90% of the problems associated with marijuana use. So they're targeting the 20%, not the 80%, just like people who drink alcohol. Most people that drink alcohol are not alcoholics. However, alcoholics are the ones that have DWIs and that cause accidents and things like this and don't function at their job and make mistakes because they're drinking on the job and things like that. You know, most people that drink alcohol drink it socially. They can drink it and stop when they need to and still function and all that. Okay. But alcoholics, again, are not the majority. They're the minority amongst people that drink alcohol. So that's kind of like the example they gave, is that most people that use marijuana are okay with it. They do it responsibly. They do it socially. You know, they do it infrequently. They're targeting this whole arena is targeting people that use it and abuse it, and that where it has affected their life in a negative way.
Well, like I said, I think you're going to find out no matter what drugs, alcohol, that goes without saying the fact that you have people that abuse everything. You have people that abuse, trying to think of some of the different, when I was in high school, a lot of kids who still drank the little bottles of Coke would come to school drinking it with aspirin in it. I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember that, but they were under the impression that the aspirin and the caffeine that was in a bottle of Coca-Cola like that zipped them up, made them more energetic, gave them kind of a leg up on being in school.
Oh, my God. I never heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and let's remember, you know, we've got people now that are snorting bath salt.
Right.
Where there's a way. There will always be people who are in search of that immediate gratification. We've talked about this many, many times. I do think that when you have a product that is grown out of the earth, and you can utilize it in a way that benefits society, it should be available to those that need it. I, however, would not want the responsibility of deeming who needs it, who doesn't need it, who's going to abuse it, who isn't going to abuse it, because
right. That's
already we can't do that with everything else that we have out there. One of my children said to me this morning, we talked about the different drugs that people are cooking and the fact that there was a fire last night, I think it was last night, in the middle of the night, a house caught fire, and they found out that there was a meth lab in the house, and that's what started the fire. And my 17-year-old son said, do you know what they use to cook methamphetamine, Graham? I said, what? He said, Sudafed. And
right.
I said, yeah, I remember when that happened. I used to use Sudafed all the time when I was young because I would get such horrible sinus infections. And Sudafed would work. Then all of a sudden you couldn't get it out in the aisles. You had to take the card for the Sudafed, take it to the – this cracked me up – take it to the pharmacist, and the pharmacist would sell it to you from behind the pharmacy. I was never asked
for my
driver.
You could only buy, like – or two boxes at a time. You couldn't buy, because they were buying like 10 boxes at a time.
Yeah. But there was never any kind of ID or any kind of structure in regard. If you took the card up, you could still get the box of Sudafed, and you can still buy Sudafed.
Wow.
And so it's it looks like it's something that's almost elusive, being able to monitor things like this. Good energy goes into this, and good thought goes into this, and people a lot smarter than me have given it a lot of thought. But the truth of the matter is, people are going to abuse whatever brings them some kind of relief or euphoria or whatever it is they're in search of. So, but if you think about that, I don't remember what the percentages that you gave were, but those 20 or 30% that really need it and can get some relief, people who are dying of AIDS, people who have got glaucoma, people who are suffering the side effects of chemotherapy, and if they really believe that this will help them, it probably will help them. And those people should be able to find some relief. I mean, that's what's fair, and that's what we're supposed to be all about. However, I do have some questions about. Will you explain to everybody what PCH is, Shelley? Do you know the breakdown of PCH?
It's TCH. And no, I don't know the chemical breakdown of TCH. The only thing I can say is that at higher levels of TCH, because this is one of the things that they were talking about with regard to the pill Marinol, because it's like concentrated TCH and the other balancing substances in the plant aren't there, is that a lot of people that take Marinol become very paranoid. Now, I know myself, pot smokers. I've told this story before. I never really did pot. I never did drugs at all, but I did try pot when I was in my 20s, and I had been given a joint that was laced with something, and I had a very, very bad experience from that. It actually took me over a decade to recover from it. But even before then, before that bad experience, I always felt a little paranoid if I tried. I had only tried marijuana like once or twice. Other people that I know, a couple of my other friends and my sister, they get paranoid on just straight marijuana, nothing added to it. It just makes them feel that way. My girlfriend, who was my best friend, Sue, from years and years ago, I mean, our friendship broke up because of her drug use. But she had gotten into cocaine and heroin at one time, and yet if she smoked marijuana, she got very paranoid. So there's a lot of people that react to whatever the substance is in TCH. I'm not really sure the chemical breakdown of it, but whatever in there, some people get completely mellowed out, and they feel very at ease and pain-free and things like that, and stimulate appetite, and they just kind of get calm. Other people get hyper and paranoid from the same substance. So when you were talking before that, you know, you can't, this isn't like a one-size-fits-all, all right? Not everybody's going to react to the same medication the same way. Not everybody's going to react to the same food the same way. When you're ingesting something in your body, you're going to have a myriad of reactions depending on that person's physiology. So to make a blanket statement on either side of these camps, that it's either good or bad is not accurate, because there's some people that are going to get mellowed out by TCH. There's other people that are going to be made worse by it, that are going to be made paranoid, and they're going to fret, and it's actually going to give them a bad experience. All right, so there's really no commonality here. You have to look at the individual, and that's why a lot of the regulations they're trying to set forth are too dichotomous. It's either this view or that view, and it's not. It's not. It actually is more complicated than that, because there are some people that can benefit, and there are some people that would not benefit, that would actually make their situation worse.
Well, so who's going to be in charge of monitoring that if they do legalize this? Any talk about that?
Well, that's one of the points Kevin made. Now, Kevin Sabat actually works with setting law. If I read a little bit further down here on his bio, he's also a policy consultant to numerous domestic and international organizations through his company, the Policy Solutions Lab. He's a senior advisor position at an Italy-based United Nations, and he recently served as the only non-medical doctor on writing committee establishing the official position in marijuana legalization for the American Society of Addiction Medicine. So, I mean, so he's been doing this for over 18 years. He's very knowledgeable, and that's his problem. He's trying to write language right now to make it more specific so that, first of all, he doesn't like the dispensaries. He feels that if this is going to be something medical, why aren't you getting it at a pharmacy then? All right, or something run with a pharmaceutical heading it instead of just grow people having a grow operation and you walk into this cash-only farm and somebody gives you a bag of medical marijuana because you came in with the right card. He says he doesn't like the way it's set up. There's no regulations for these dispensaries. He says he said in some cases they're very unsavory. And he said that wasn't the concept when it got legalized in California and Colorado. So he believes that the legalization should have stronger regulations, that if you're saying it's for medical use, then you should be getting it in a pharmacy or a pharmacy-run type grow situation. If you want to be able to dispense it from where it's been grown, then there still has to be more of a clinical atmosphere there. And I agree with that, you know, so that people can walk in and use credit cards or whatever, these cash-only. He said that should be a red flag right there, that they're making it cash-only operations. All right? These people don't pay taxes on it. So everybody else that has a business is paying taxes. But did you know that a lot of these grow houses don't? The governor of Colorado got upset about that because he tried to not allow it to be legalized. But once it got legalized in Colorado, he said, fine, now that you're a legal business, you got to pay sale taxes like every other business. And he actually got that law put there. But think about that. Somebody could start a grow operation, sell this. They don't pay any taxes. So anybody else who starts up a business has got more financial responsibilities than somebody that starts a grow operation. That's why they became so prevalent so fast, you know. So it wasn't really thought through, and he's trying to rewrite some of the legislation going forward so that when it does become legalized, there's regulations for the dispensaries, there's regulations for how they operate business. In other words, he said this is a much bigger picture than just taking care of the person who needs it. He also believes that in the interim, while all this is being worked out and setting up the places, that people that are currently using marijuana for relief, people that have cancer and AIDS and MS and things like that, should not be criminalized. He does agree with Aaron Houston on that the criminalization for users, especially users that have illnesses, should be taken off the books and that they shouldn't be prosecuted anymore. He doesn't believe in that either.
I think that's just stupidity. I mean, I read an article about this was before we started doing the show. There was I think it was on 60 Minutes, as a matter of fact, the first time I saw it, and then I read about it, about a young woman who was losing her life to cancer, and she had gone through chemo, radiation, all of the above. She was pretty much wasting away right before her family's eyes, and nothing brought her any relief so that she could enjoy a meal with her family or spend any kind of quality time in those last weeks or months or whatever left. And a judge allowed her to legally use marijuana. Now, and I don't know where that's at this point in time. Was there any talk about that, whether somebody can have it mandated in a court of law that it's okay because of your circumstances for you to legally purchase and use marijuana? Is that something that is being done in other places, or can that just happen in the states where medical marijuana has been legalized?
But they were talking about the fact that Florida has stricter rules with regard to marijuana, and I should have written it down. They said the name of a woman who evidently is dying from cancer. I guess she lives in Florida, and she's not being permitted to get any medical marijuana, and she's suffering terribly right now, and she doesn't have very long to live. And Aaron Houston kept bringing her name up. And Kevin even agreed at one point about that, that he doesn't believe that people that are already using it and getting relief from it should be penalized, while this is all going on, there should be some lax rules for somebody that really, they're not using it to get high, they're using it for symptom relief. So they both feel that there should be some sort of like an interim law that assists these people while this debate is raging and while decisions are being made. So I thought that was interesting, you know. But when you look at it, you know,
I can't
one of the
imagine.
Things,
huh? Let's look at this realistically for a second, though. You have somebody who's dying, and all the doctors see it. You see it by looking at them, and there's no one person, no group of people that can step in and say, absolutely, positively, make sure this lady gets what she needs to make her more comfortable. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's hot fudge sundaes. Somebody should be saying, yes, she can have this whenever she needs it. I mean,
right.
All the drugs that are out there, give me a break.
Well, Kevin Sabat, now he's the guy against the legalization, because one guy stood up, and I mean, the emotions were really, really high last night. So you could tell that some of the people in the audience were, in fact, using. There was a woman behind me who I heard her talking. She had she's had cancer 3 times, and it's the one thing that helps her get through. So I'm assuming that means she's done chemo and things like that, and she said the cancer keeps coming back, and it's the only thing that helps her tolerate it and keeps her eating. And I heard her talking behind me. And there was a guy down at the end of the aisle that evidently has been, I think he said he's had AIDS for 15 years, and he's crediting the marijuana with keeping him alive, which I don't understand because it's not curative, but he stood up at one point and he started yelling at Kevin Sabat, saying that, because he had made a comment about, you know, that it should be only available through a pharmacy and stuff like that. So this guy stands up. The moderator, Randy Schultz, made him sit down and told everybody to calm down because they wouldn't continue if people were going to be heckling him. So he did. He sat down. He calmed down. But the point is that Kevin Sabat looked at this guy and he said, look, he says, I'm not the enemy and I'm not against you getting relief. He says, I'm telling you right now. He says, as far as I'm concerned, he said, if you're terminally ill and he says, and this is what's giving you relief, he says, to be honest with you, he says, I don't care if you shoot up heroin, if that's what gets you relief. He says, I don't think those types of activities should be criminalized. He says, even going to something like heroin. He said, that's just my opinion. He says, I'm not trying to rob people, he said, of getting relief and making their lives better. He said, what I'm saying is that if it's not regulated, it gets abused. He says, and that is my main position. He says, I've seen what happened in California. He said, it was not regulated properly. Even California realizes that and is now trying to backpedal and restructure this. California legalized this in 1996. It took 8 years to really get up and running. All right, so he said around 2004 is when it really got prevalent in California. And now they're realizing, now finally in 2013, they're realizing that they don't have sufficient regulations. It's really just running rampant in California. It wasn't set up and organized properly. And now they're trying to backpedal and fix that. But now it's harder because they're everywhere. Like he said, there's more dispensaries than there are Starbucks, and I found that to be a shocking statistic. But you know, but that's what he was talking about, is the fact that there has to be higher regulations, and these places have to be administered by somebody, but nobody in the government is doing that.
Well, that's shocking. It's like everything else, though. It's just like, how were we allowed to spiral into all the pill mills, Shell?
That's right.
I mean, you know, all the conversations we have, all the bureaucracy involved right now in people listening to our telephone conversations, reading our emails, all that kind of stuff. And then there's all this stuff about passing credit checks and background checks. And you can look up on the Internet and find out anything you want to know about anybody as long as you have a credit card or a debit card the world is open to you today.
Right.
Open. However, with all that, with all those extra glasses, for all the people in power to be able to see what's going on, it still blossoms right in front of their eyes. It's like only what's important in the moment, only what everybody's talking about has everyone's attention. Instead of there being departments or groups of people that are pinpointed to, okay, there's you and me and Nina and Diana and Carol Ann, and say there's 10 of us. I say to you, Shelley, keep an eye on what's going on with marijuana. Nina, keep an eye on what's going on with distribution of oxycodone and OxyContin. Diana, keep an eye on what's going on with the distribution of Adderall and Ritalin, and I can't even remember the names of all of them, for our young people. And that's all you guys keep an eye on. Instead of everybody being involved in everything, particular people are involved, or different departments, if you will, are just involved in watching one flower blossom. There will be a better accountability for everything that's going on out there. The way we sit right now is ridiculous. It's kind of like, well, what's going on with the medical marijuana? Well, just a minute, because I think there's three or four people in here right now that know a little bit about that. It doesn't work like that. There has to be accountability, and somebody has to be keeping an eye. And I know firsthand that we all perform better when somebody's watching us. And it can't just be God. For whatever reasons, people think that God forgives them for anything, so as long as they pray later, everything's going to be okay. It can't be that. There has to be our government, our schools, our organizations have to be set up so that everybody has somebody to answer to.
Exactly, exactly.
Otherwise, it gets out of control. California is renowned for that. Starting something just takes off like wildfire, right?
That's true.
There are some of the other things, too. When you mention taxes, now, if somebody sells something today, regardless of what it is, isn't there already established tax laws? I mean, isn't it already true that if you sell something, you have to pay, at the very least, income tax, at the very least, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was shocked that they weren't, that these grow houses, these dispensaries, weren't being subject to tax. I'm wondering how that even happened.
How can it be? If you're putting money in, you have to show where the money came from eventually, if an account, otherwise it's, you know.
Listen to this statistic. This is on the fact sheet that I got from the Palm Beach County Substance Awareness Coalition. They said that the total overall cost of substance abuse, now this is all substances, alcohol, drugs, marijuana, in the U.S., including productivity, health, and crime-related issues, exceeds $600 billion annually. Think about that. Okay. I guess you can go to this website, OMDCP, Economic Cost of Drug Abuse, so that they give you where the study was done. All right. Federal and state alcohol taxes raise about $14.5 billion, which only covers 6% of alcohol's total cost to society. Federal and state tobacco taxes raise $25 billion. Think about that, that cigarettes raise more tax dollars than alcohol. I found that surprising because I thought cigarette use was down. Federal and state tobacco tax raises $5 billion, covering only about 13% of tobacco's cost to society, you know, with cancer and everything else. You know, so I thought that was some interesting statistics.
Shelley?
Yes.
Okay, stop one second. Let me ask you something. if tobacco usage and the taxes generated from tobacco usage, is there a counter amount that shows how much it costs each state for the Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security for the people that are now under the direct care of a doctor due to lung cancer, throat cancer?
That $600 billion annually is nationwide and cumulative across, like, people being out of work for a day because they're saying productivity, health consequences, and crime. So they're saying the total cost to society. They didn't break it down, like, what part of it is the person being sick, what part of it is crime, and, you know. So, but if you went on that site, and maybe this is something we can do to kind of fine-tune that number a little bit, like what portion of it is this and what portion of it is that. They don't break it down here. They're giving a cumulative, but they're getting it from a report that I guess did break it down.
Well, it'd be interesting to know when everybody talks about we need the income from the sale of tobacco, we need the income from the sale of alcohol, we need the income, you know, the taxes that are paid on it, and now they're talking about nobody paying taxes at grow centers for marijuana, that will be changed immediately. But it would be interesting to know if by, I mean, it's like robbing Peter to pay Paul. If you're making $100 on taxes for the cigarettes that are sold at your local 7-Eleven, and then your government is paying out $1,000 for the treatment of all the people that are suffering the consequences of smoking, how does that even begin to balance out? It doesn't.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking about, because, like I said, I'm kind of in a third camp in this whole issue because I don't believe in pharmaceuticals except in rare occasions. And it's like if somebody got a diagnosis of cancer and they believed that chemotherapy was the only way they were going to save their lives, and tomorrow chemotherapy became illegal, you would see an uprising. You would see people trying to get chemotherapy legalized, even though it wasn't really a good option for them, and there were other ways to heal the body. Because there's so much propaganda around chemo, people are basically brainwashed to think that chemotherapy is the only way to battle cancer. They don't realize there are so many other holistic ways that don't damage the body. I'm almost looking at medical marijuana the same way, because there are so many other alternatives that are natural to the body, that can stimulate appetite, that can help with pain reduction, that can help people to improve motor functions, like with MS. I know two people personally that completely cured themselves of MS, all right, that got all their motor skills back and did not use medical marijuana to do it, all right? And these are people I know personally, all right? So I know that there's other alternatives out there, but unfortunately, people that get in here are single-minded. They don't understand that there's other options, so they're battling for the only option that they're aware of, which is medical marijuana. And that's why I'm using the analogy, if chemo became illegal tomorrow, the majority of people think that chemo is the only way to battle cancer, and you and I know that not only is it not the only way, it's not even the best way. That's my attitude towards medical marijuana. And again, there are some people that could benefit from medical marijuana. We've seen some people that did benefit from chemo, but in my opinion, it's the exception to the rule, and it's going to happen with a much lower frequency.
Well, there's many, many schools of thought on all of these topics in regard to, you know, what works and what doesn't work. But the truth of the matter is, it's what an individual thinks is working on them. It's like, you know, the man that you meet that thinks, or the lady that you meet that thinks the clothes she wears are what makes her look the most beautiful, and everybody's talking about her behind her back because of the clothes she wears. Or the man, or the man who, you know, decides that it's improving his looks by taking all the hair that's still growing in the back of his neck and combing it forward and hoping that it stays put when he's walking on a windy day. All of these things are the perception of the person that's involved. Chemotherapy and radiation has saved many, many lives. I mean, I've looked at the statistics. I know people who have survived by doing chemotherapy and radiation. The problem that nobody quite gets about cancer that I get completely, I don't have any answers about it, but I get it completely, is the fact that once you have cancer, there's always cancer cells in your body. And the best thing you can do for yourself, if you survive cancer by using chemotherapy or radiation, is to put yourself on a regimen so that the rest of your body builds up a major immunity, major strength, major health throughout your body by food choices, exercise choices, lifestyle choices that increase your ability to fight off those dormant cancer cells that are in your body. That's the only way, ultimately, that anybody will survive cancer mm-hmm. for the rest of their lives. And right. I mean, that sounds like a double-edged sword when you say survive cancer for the rest of your life. That's kind of an oxymoron. However, marijuana is always going to be something that people think brings them some euphoria. The truth of the matter is, if you have cancer, God bless you, but if you have cancer and you've just been through chemotherapy and radiation, you are sick as hell. You are ready, if somebody told you, if you cut off your big toe on your right foot and stuck it in your ear and it would make you feel better, you would do it. Because that's how horrible it is for some of these people. And the fact of the matter is, until you can figure out a way to get yourself healthier, not just get rid of the cancer, but healthier, many of these things will work for many people. But you have to be able to work at the rest of your body getting healthier. And that's what everybody seems to miss. And you and I have seen miracles, absolutely. But those miracles disappear, Shell, the minute they add back in the martini every afternoon or the glass of wine every evening or the strawberry shortcake every Sunday, right?
That's right.
Those results disappear.
Well, the old adage is, one of my favorite lecturers, Kevin Trudeau, says this all the time. It was actually something he got from his mentor. He said, if you want things in your life to change, you have to change things in your life. So if you're somebody mm-hmm. who has suffered from cancer or some disease and you overcame it, and then you go back to the lifestyle you had before you recovered, you're just opening the door for whatever that disease was, including cancer, to come back. I mean, it astonishes me that people will just completely revert back once they become recovered because they don't understand it. Now they've just opened the door for it to reoccur.
Exactly. So I guess it's all about, you know, taking charge of your own life, whether you make the decision to utilize the comfort of participating in medical marijuana, or you utilize the opportunity to put yourself in a healthier place by your own other choices, mm-hmm. or you utilize what the Western medicine has come up with, which in some cases has been amazing. I don't want to take away from anything because I works on somebody somewhere.
Right.
But I think this is an interesting conversation. I think that I'm glad you went last night. I'm sorry I wasn't able to be there. I ended up having appointments all afternoon and then ended up at a very very entertaining party at Kaiser University. So that was fun. But I want to wish everybody a great day today. Happy Halloween, everybody. I hope you have good, safe time this evening. And we'll be back tomorrow with a recap of this week's conversations. And thanks, Shelley, for going to the debate last night. Very interesting information. And If anybody has anything they'd like to add to this, call us and talk to us about it. So everybody have a great day. Bye-bye and God bless. Bye, Shel.
Bye, Reen. Have a wonderful day, and have a wonderful day, everybody.